Welcome to Jazz Rhythm, an exploration of the lore, culture, and personalities of early jazz. New Orleans is the birthplace of jazz, and since the 1960s, a living embodiment of jazz origins there has been Preservation Hall. For over three decades, two of its stalwart performers were the Humphrey Brothers, trumpeter Percy and clarinetist Willie. My guest this hour, Bill Carter, knew both as a friend and fellow musician. He's deftly portrayed them and the rich community of New Orleans traditional music in his book, Preservation Hall. This is a portrait of Willie and Percy Humphrey of Preservation Hall on Jazz Rhythm, jumping swing, classic blues, and hot jazz old and new. I'm Dave Radlauer. The Humphrey brothers, born around the turn of the century, were both part of the rich Louisiana culture and traditions that shaped early jazz. They shared in the golden age of New Orleans music that evolved on the streets, in the churches, on board the riverboats, and from the music for all occasions of New Orleans. To help us reflect on jazz origins and traditions, I wanted to share with you the in-depth talks I had with Bill Carter shortly after the passing of the Humphreys in the mid-1990s. He knew them well, and he's authored the definitive book, Preservation Hall, Music from the Heart. Here's Willie Humphrey with a 1983 recording, China Boy.
Jazz, as you know, moved from New Orleans north. It then picked up more material in the north, and particularly because recordings became popular at that same time, northern material came back to New Orleans. I believe the China Boy was more of a northern tune that came back down and became a New Orleans standard by this kind of backwash process.
So the New Orleans tradition is not a pure oral tradition by this time. It's interacting with phonograph and the radio broadcasting.
That's right.
So
when Louis Armstrong made his records in Chicago in the late 20s, The people in New Orleans were rushing down to Wuerlein's music store on Canal Street to buy those records and listen to them. He was setting new standards. There was this backward influence on where he came from. That's one of those things that historians have not documented, but we know it happened.
We might just want to note briefly that Willie did record with Lucky Millinder and Red Allen during his stays in New York.
That's right. He played with Paul Barberin a lot in the 50s. It's not till really the 60s that we start getting the real Willie Humphrey on records. And he's one of the late discoveries in jazz. He was not a spectacular musician, and after he got more recognition, he started playing better. This is one of the remarkable things about him. Many, many musicians hit their peak in their 20s or 30s. Willie was just a gradually rising tide. He was playing as great at the age of 93 in 1994 as anyone had ever heard him, 93 years old. As he came out into the limelight from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, also he came out from under
The shadow of George Lewis.
George Lewis.
Because Lewis died when? Mid-60s?
Mid-60s, late 60s. Lewis had a very distinctive sound, a sound that was easy for people to clone and imitate, and you knew George Lewis right away. And he had a fantastic band of which he was the leader. Willie's style is much harder to define. His real qualities are subtle. Willie's qualities are in the bending of a note here and there around the edges. They're adaptive to what's happening. They're not definitive. I don't know of one Willie Humphrey imitator. I know some people that have a little influence from him, including myself. I think that it's a subtle style, and it deserves much greater appreciation than it has had in the histories of jazz. Elements of a Johnny Dodds in his attack and his tone and his blues sense. He had some Creole blood, but not all, so there's a bit of that Creole fluidity and sweetness.
He has that very low, woody tone, very favoring the lower range of the clarinet.
Yeah.
That seems to be a definite Creole tendency or manner in
That's
the clarinet
right.
style.
And the fluid running between registers all over the horn in one swoop, that's very Creole, that's very Willie. A Dodds or a Bechet would more tend to stay in a certain range for a certain period of time. In Pennies from Heaven, we got a guy named Joe Butler singing it, who was a wonderful bass player and a cousin of Louis Armstrong's. And he even looked a little bit like Louis. They called him Twat. Everybody knew him as Twat Butler. That was his name. Who knows how he got it? The version I got was that he parted his hair in the middle in a certain way, and when he bent down to do something, that's all you could think about. It's a guy loaded with humor, and particularly in the way he would put a song across. And he wasn't a famous singer. He was a workaday bass man, and every now and then they'd give him the mic and let him do one of his songs. And I think the light comic relief part of jazz is important. It's an important part of life. And his phrasing, the unabashed way he just hams it up. I mean, there's nothing held back in this guy's approach. It doesn't even matter what words he used. It's the humor that's just coming out from inside the guy, and you'll hear it on Pennies from Heaven.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know it's cloud and time, pennies from heaven. Find your fortune falling all over town. baby, be sure that your umbrella is upside down. Trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. But when you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven, baby, for you and me. Now you know, sometimes everybody wants to come to the city. Nobody wants to stay in the country. We have to have somebody to send this food to us. Nobody stay in the country. How we gonna live in the city? So there you go. You like them hot shanks? You like that cornbread? You like that flour? You like that old cabbage and them ribs? How you gonna do? You ain't going out there and feed them all. And you know I ain't going back there where I came from. But let me tell you one thing. Somebody gonna do it and it ain't gonna be me. But let me tell you, this is good living here. Nobody comes here and wants to go back. But watch this year. We're gonna have y'all a senator. Now, yeah. Every time it rains from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven, my beloved Mary. You'll find your fortune falling all over town. Baby, be your red umbrella and upside down, yeah. Trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers. If you want the thing you love, you must have showers. But when you hear it thunder, yeah, don't run under a tree. They'll be finished from heaven, baby, for you and Bob. Bob and I, big, big, yeah. Have a die, you dog, yeah.
Joe Butler, Kid Twat, as he was called, singing his version of Pennies from Heaven with clarinetist Willie Humphrey in 1974. My guest Bill Carter knew Willie and played clarinet alongside both Humphrey brothers during a lengthy friendship as he researched and wrote his excellent book, Preservation Hall. And I admit, frankly, it wasn't really until this talk that I realized how influential Preservation Hall Jazz Band was to the worldwide revival of New Orleans music, though that's partly due to being from the West Coast, where our own traditional jazz revival launched in the 40s. By the way, in this next segment, Bill Carter mentions trumpeter Bunk Johnson, and in the near future, I'll be presenting a comprehensive series on Bunk.
Things do get simplified over the years in New Orleans. This is part of the story. I think that the music was more complex in the 20s than it is today, or became after World War II.
Explain a little bit what you mean about the complexity of the music in the 20s versus the revival style.
In the early 40s, a musician named Bunk Johnson was rediscovered. Discovered, you can say. He was one of the early teachers of Louis Armstrong. He was out on a plantation working, and he was brought out to public view by some enthusiasts, including William Russell. Suddenly, this became world-famous music, and it was thought that what had been discovered was a sort of archetype or prototype of early jazz. It had an early sound to it, especially the way it was recorded. Skeletal kind of playing, in a much simpler kind of playing than, let's say, the bands that we heard from the 20s that were recorded in Chicago of New Orleans musicians, Louis Armstrong's bands or Jello Morton's bands, so forth. But a lot of careful research since that time has shown that generally, the music in the 20s was more complicated, more arranged, and with more sophisticated musical parts. Some of the bands that played in the riverboats. There were recordings made in New Orleans in the late 20s. Some of them were simpler in style, like Sam Morgan's. But in my book, Preservation Hall, I go into that in some detail. And yes, some of the more sophisticated musicians did move out of town and go north and stayed north. So there were simpler ones left, but that's only part of the story. The music simply evolved into a simpler direction over the 30s and 40s and 50s. partly the market conditions. It was being played for country-type folks in dance halls and beer parlors and on the waterfront. They wanted just a basic dance rhythm.
But then after World War II, a group of primarily younger enthusiasts came along and discovered this music as a, say, in contrast to the big band and the sweet music.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they sort of wanted to see it as a kind of a primitive music, it seems.
That's right. You know, they went
so this appealed to their preconception of the music.
That's right. And they went through a kind of reverse training of themselves as musicians to unlearn some of their European-schooled habits. And these did include a lot of European musicians. So a new standard of playing became defined according to the musicians that were formed around Bunk Johnson's band. It's a curious thing, but that's worldwide. You find musicians playing in that exact style all over the world today.
Yeah. So Preservation Hall and the music played there seems to follow in that tradition.
Preservation Hall was really the musicians, the black musicians of the first, second, third generations New Orleans who were available to play and who could play well. It reflected who was in town at the time and who was still alive at the time. So there was quite a lot of variety in it. But yes, you're right, the basic style was simpler, but there's quite a lot of variety played there. This is a tune that hardly needs an introduction, The Saints Go Marching In, played by the great George Lewis band of the early 50s. I think you can hear how fresh and alive this band made that song sound. They're really the band that made it famous worldwide. One of the very first bands who recorded hymns as jazz. The bassist, Slow Drag Pavago, has switched to tuba, or at least somebody is playing tuba in this, but that makes it a little reminiscent of the street parades.
One of the earliest recordings of The Saints, a song that cost a couple extra bucks to request at Preservation Hall because musicians got so tired of playing it during the 50s and 60s. Percy Humphrey with the band of clarinetist George Lewis in the early 50s. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm, exploring with Bill Carter, Preservation Hall and its longtime trumpet and clarinet masters, Percy and Willie Humphrey. Bill totally immersed himself in New Orleans jazz and traditions while researching and writing his book, Preservation Hall, Music from the Heart.
I hear a lot of Willie in your playing, that Creole, Gully Low clarinet style. I think it comes across very nicely in some of the Magnolia recordings.
It's hard to trace sources. What came from Willie, what came from other people that both Willie and I listened to, but it's a big river out there, the Mississippi.
You and Walter Sarath got together on a little recording with a Robbie Schlosser pickup band, the Magnolia Five on Stomp Off, and you and Walt seemed to really hit it off well in that twin clarinet style.
Yeah, Walt and I, that's a magnificent thing. If you find someone that you just groove with like that, and there are moments when there's some other level of consciousness going on because you go right together onto something that was totally unplanned.
And one of the best tunes on that album is Shake That Thing.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. There are some things that happen in there between the two horns, which is the kind of thing that if you've got a great friend and you're having a beer together or something and you suddenly realize you're talking about stuff that's in the other person's mind, it's like that. There's a psychic twining that can happen at moments.
It's a rapport?
Rapport. And suddenly you're playing a parallel thing that neither of you ever thought about that happened right there in that time. And there's a few of those moments in that track. I'd known Walt since the 50s. I had a little band in Los Angeles. At that time, he was playing washboard and drums in my band and just picking up the clarinet. And now he's a wonderful reed guy. That recording was done on the basis of Jimmy Mazzie being in town for a weekend, and we played a
festival. Jimmy Mazzie, a banjo player and vocalist from New England area, Massachusetts?
Yes, or actually lives in a town called Holliston near Boston. And he's quite a renowned guy in his own right in that area. When we were traveling once with the Magnolia Band, he sat in and things cooked. And so Robbie Schlosser, the bass player and leader of the Magnolia, arranged for this session, which followed a weekend of playing together at a jazz festival. And we were totally exhausted and zonked by the time we walked into the studio on Sunday. And I guess our defenses were down and our mellowness was there, and it just came out in a way that was lots of fun. Wipe them all.
Jimmy Mazzi singing his peculiar variant of Shake That Thing, a fabulous reed duet from Walter Sarath of Golden Eagle Jazz Band and my guest Bill Carter. We're exploring with Bill the music of Willie and Percy Humphrey, who were so key to Preservation Hall Jazz Band for over three decades, from its beginning in 1961 until the passing of both Humphrey brothers in the mid-1990s. I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Jazz Rhythm. Still ahead, Percy Humphrey's own bands from the 50s and 60s, hymns and spirituals in the evolution of early jazz, and some intriguing fine points of Willie Humphrey's clarinet style. Promotional support is provided by the Mississippi Rag, a monthly publication covering traditional jazz and ragtime personalities and contemporary events. Information online at mississippirag.com. The Jazz Rhythm website is jazzhot.bigstep.com, and you might also want to check out preservationhall.com. Here's a long unissued Percy Humphrey track from the mid-1950s that includes the drummer Paul Barberin, with whom both brothers worked, and yet another New Orleans jazz treasure, clarinetist Raymond Burke.